Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Scott Seven Podcast. I hope you all are having a wonderful day today. And joining me today is Micah Current. Micah, how are you doing this day?
I'd be better if this Ohio weather would certainly make up its mind.
So it's
But
spring
that's spring
break.
in Ohio.
Yeah. Well, it's spring break for my kids. And in one way, it's a blessing because they're staying with their grandparents for a few days.
Yeah.
So I get to be, and Laura has her school doesn't have spring break this week, so she has to go to work this week. So I'm kind of by myself, which is fantastic. I'm like, great, I can relax, get a lot of stuff done. And then I realized, oh, I have my doctorate class this week online. So I get to sit for the next 2 days online. And then Wednesday, I get to drive up to Ashland to go pick up my kids because that's the halfway point between the grandparents and me. So
Isn't
it's
that kind
like,
of ironic that you don't have to go to school because it's online this week, and yet you still have to go up there because you got to pick up your
well, the
kids?
nice thing is I could drop off all my books because I checked out a bunch of books from the library. So it's like, well, I can go up there, I can do some work up there, I can get some more books because I don't have many books on my historical context. So it's like, okay, since I just started my historical context last week, it's like, all right, I can get some more sources. So it kind of works out a little bit, but still it's like, oh man, I wish I would have had more like relaxing time, and unfortunately I don't. But yeah. So that's me. So story's gone wild, Micah. What's going wild in your life?
Oh, I have the best one for you. And I kept telling people at work last week, you can't make this up because in my life it just happens. These crazy things happen. So clearly I'm follically challenged and I choose to shave my head. And last week on Monday night, I've been shaving my head at night so that in the morning all I have to do is take a shower and get ready and go. I don't have to do anything in reference to shaving my head. And so in our house we have three bathrooms, and then upstairs we have the master bathroom and a full bathroom. I was in the full bathroom shaving my head, and then to keep everybody's wives happy, what do you do, Scott, when you finish? You rinse the sink out,
You clean up your
right?
hair, yeah.
You clean up your hair. So I got a cup of warm water and went to rinse the sink out. Now you think that would be simple, right? I turn the warm water on, the hot water on, to rinse the sink out, and the handle of the sink shot off of the sink like a geyser. And proceeded to just spew hot water all over my bathroom.
Oh, wow.
And I tried to get underneath the sink and I tried to turn the hot water valve off, and it was so hot. The water was so hot that it was steaming up the bathroom. I couldn't see it. And I'm screaming for my wife for help. And so she runs up the stairs and she's like, oh, what is happening? And I'm like, I need help turning the water off. So she tried to turn the water off. She couldn't. Meanwhile, this water is scalding hot, right? It's burning
Oh,
us trying to.
jeez.
So she runs downstairs, she turns the main water valve off, and we proceed to use every towel that we own and sop up about 2 inches of water out of the bathroom and throw it in the bathtub because that's the only place we could throw it at the time, and mop the floor and clean the bathroom. And all I could think was, oh crap, our brand new living room, because we just renovated downstairs. Like, we have a new kitchen, we have a new floor, all the stuff downstairs is new. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to ruin it. It's going to flood through the floor. It's going to be a mess. So, all that to say, I spent most of the weekend ripping my bathroom apart because I'm going to put a brand new vanity in and new floor and new toilet, everything, because pretty much ruined that bathroom. All because the handle flew off of the sink. We don't even know why it did that. I've never had that happen before. And so, talk about wild.
Yeah, geez, that's insane.
Nothing ruins a house. Like, if you talk about home ownership, like, that's probably for me the scariest thing more than anything is water. I mean, obviously a fire is a terrible thing, But the reality is that the fires is a fire, a chance of getting a fire is far less than you having some sort of water issues in the 30 years of homeownership that you may have. A pipe could bust because it's cold, washing machine. Like we had that happen a couple months ago where the hose came undone in the back of the washer and we thought the washer was leaking. And yeah, nothing is worse in a house in a homeownership than water.
Yeah. Oh goodness. Wow. Yeah, my story's gone wild. It's not
Not
that
as
crazy.
wet, not as
Not
wet
as
as the
wet. It's not as wet and wild as that. But no, so a couple years back, like well, let me go back further. So there's been times where when Laura and I first got married, that I would be adamant, like, oh, you got to do this, or oh, this is great. And she'd be like, oh, no, it's not. Like, she grew up without a dishwasher. So we had our first apartment together, and I'm using the dishwasher. She's like, why are you using the dishwasher? Just wash it by hand. Like, thought that I was being ridiculous. Well, then she didn't think it was so ridiculous when it's like, oh, wow, I could put all these dishes in this little box. And they get clean instead of having them pile, and then you have to move them all out of the sink, fill the sink with soapy water, wash them, dry them, put them on the rack, like all that. Like, so there's been a lot of incidences in our life where she will be adamant against something, and then when she actually uses it, she's like, wow, this is like the best thing ever. Like random stuff, like sideways can openers, the works. So for Christmas a couple of years back, I did what any dumb husband would do, and I gifted my wife Tupperware. So obviously, when she opens up her present and sees a box of Tupperware, she starts to open it up thinking that, oh, it's one of those gag gifts. The real gift is inside. So she was so disappointed when she opened up that box and she got a box of Tupperware. She was not happy with me. So fast forward to last week, we're sitting there, and my wife is driving to school. She packs her lunch, everything else, and she uses the Tupperware to put all her stuff in. So then she goes, "Hey, Scott." And I go, "Yeah." And she goes, "Do you think you could buy some more Tupperware?" Because we're getting a little bit low, and I'm tired of using like the cheap plasticky stuff that you get from like the stores, or like when we were first married, we would have like lunch meat, and then we'd always just use the containers that the lunch meat was in, wash them, and use them as Tupperware. She's like, I want real Tupperware. Can you buy me some Tupperware? So again, it just goes to show you that sometimes, even in my stupidity, I am a genius.
We would be lost without our Tupperware.
I know, it's great.
Like our
I
meal
think that's
prep,
weird
all of
that I
our
have to talk
stuff.
about Tupperware.
Yeah, well. Never a dull moment, right?
Never a dull moment. So, the topic we're going to talk about today is something we kind of talked about last year. We talked about the topic of mental health in the church, and we want to kind of revisit that again, mainly because I think even though we are in the year 2024, the topic of mental health within inside churches is still kind of a taboo topic. And also, Mike was going to kind of share a little bit on the topic and just kind of his journey with mental health. So, Micah, I'm just going to go ahead and give you the floor to begin this conversation.
The floor,
Or the digital space, the digital floor.
the Zoom call instead of the you said you were going to, what was the app that you guys are using for your class later?
Microsoft Teams.
I don't know that I ever used that.
Well, we'll see
I'm
how
an a
good it is.
I use I'm an Apple guy, so here we are. So yeah, you had texted me the other day and you were like, what do you want to talk about? And, we have kind of a running list and we did sort of an episode on mental health last year, or we did. What remind me of the episode that we did and the listeners.
Yeah, just I'll have to go bring that up because I'm not sure what episode that one was. So hold on.
Well, didn't we interview somebody?
We did interview someone. So it was one of my buddies and one of my former church members who
Okay.
ended up having some medicine
Oh,
being messed up.
Got it. Okay, got it. So I wasn't really sure what I was trying to aim my discussion based off the diagnosis of the interview that we did the last time. And
Yeah.
I have, been open about what's going on with me in a number of different circles, but last October, I started experiencing severe panic attacks, and I had never had any sort of mental health, depression, anxiety, schizophrenia, whatever you want to call it, or whatever kind of mental health you want to call it. And honestly, I just hit a wall. I was working full time. I was in graduate school. I had some woundedness with my family, woundedness with church hurt. And I hit a wall, and I got to the point where I couldn't even go into the grocery store. I couldn't go into the coffee shop. I couldn't go into the doctor's office. I couldn't go into, if I went to work, it would be for a half a day, and then I'd have to come home because it would just be too much for me to go to work. I would just be too overwhelmed. And, thank God that I have an amazing team that supports and understands their issues with mental health. And I needed to get myself kind of back on track. And so I went to the doctor, I want to say, end of September, beginning of October, because I had started experiencing symptoms of anxiety, and my doctor was like, "Do you think you have anxiety?" And I was like, "I don't know, but I just haven't been feeling myself." And so we were driving to my in-laws on 75 North and on the interstate, and all of a sudden I just felt really warm and felt like I was going to pass out, and felt like I couldn't breathe. I felt like I couldn't swallow, and I had to pull over, and I just started sobbing uncontrollably, and my wife had to take me home, and I laid on the floor and just shook on my bedroom floor. And the doctor had given me two different types of medicine. One was just kind of a more of a long, everyday kind of thing, but it takes 4 to 8 weeks for that to build up into your system. And once it's in there, it gets better. And for me, it took longer than 2 months. It took a considerable amount of time. I don't think it really started working until, December, January. And me being the macho male personality, she gave me this other medicine, which was for more of the immediate, reaction. And I hadn't taken it, and she was like, "Well, if you have panic attacks or if you feel really anxious, you need to take this." And so I don't know why, if I was scared, if it was pride, if it was all of the above. And I was convinced for the longest time that I didn't have anxiety. And anxiety can be a number of different things, as you know. Like, it can be physical, it can be mental, it can be there's various symptoms, panic attacks, tremors, heart palpitations, sweat. Like, there are just so many different things. So I started taking this other medication, and it was like night and day. Like, I just started feeling myself again. And I went back to the doctor for the follow-up, and she was like, "You're smiling." And I was like, "Well, I feel a little bit more stable than what I was." And she wants me to stay on both medications and for now, and then we're going to reassess in a couple of months and see where we're at. But all that to say, like, I keep telling people it's by the grace of God, medication and therapy, that I'm where I'm at, because I'm a big advocate of therapy, and I had started therapy before any of these physical symptoms had happened. And the reality is that I think we all have issues, but like I feel like I have some considerable issues in respect to being a pastoral ministry for 10 years, and there being a lot of burnout and a lot of hurt from the church. And if I'm being completely transparent, I as a part of like this whole anxiety journey, like I have not been able to go where there are big crowds. And what happens when you go to church? There's a crowd, right? And so I haven't been able to go into physical space for worship since probably October or November of last year. And over the past couple of weeks, I've felt better. I've been feeling better. I really wanted to go to church again. And so I've tried the last 2 weeks to get ready and go to church. And I get to the point where we're gonna go, and I just feel like I'm not good enough, and I feel like I'm not ready enough, and I feel like I'm not and I told Alicia that like I feel like I failed in a way. I feel like I failed in ministry because I'm not actively serving in the church at the moment. And I know that what we do is good ministry wise, and this podcast, and I do consulting and stuff at churches, but like leading worship on Sunday on a regular basis, teaching, being a part of the staff, all those things, I haven't done that for over a year. And so in a sense, when I walk into church, it's hard to sit there and not, it's hard to sit there and not, think to myself that I've been a failure, because I'm not serving on a regular basis. And it's really a struggle for me. And so, yeah, it's just been so many different things and so many different emotions. And I'm working on trying to find a church to go to, trying to get a place to get plugged in, and dealing with this, anxiety at the same time. And so for me, it's been a constant battle. And I know that like once I get into a church and get connected, I'll be more active within in the church body, whether it's, helping with worship, helping with teaching, helping with technology, helping with live streaming. Multiple areas to serve, leading small groups, whatever. But I'm here to tell you that like I didn't believe it wasn't that I didn't believe that anxiety was a real thing or depression was a real thing, but until you go through some of those things and feel some of those things, it is unbelievable the reality that you put yourself in once you experience those things firsthand. I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy. It scared me, and I'm sure it scared my wife, but the reality is your nerves and your body are trying to tell you something that it's called fight or flight mode. And so once your body goes into fight or flight mode, you end up just panicking, and hence the panic attacks. So yeah, I don't have really the words to say of how important I think mental health is. And as somebody who's just recently went through it and it's very fresh in my mind, the reality of it is that we need to take mental health more seriously, and especially in the church, because we just don't know what people are going through. That can include pastors, that can include staff, that can include parishioners, lay leaders. And there's so many things out there besides anxiety. There's generalized anxiety. There's socialized, or I'm sorry, social anxiety. There is depression. There's bipolar disorder. There is schizophrenia. There is, you name it. And there's multiple disorders that people go through. And, thank God that I didn't go through any sort of depression, because depression I hear is just way worse, where people just don't want to get out of bed. And they just don't want to function. So the reality is that, I hit a brick wall, and I just want to be an advocate for those who are suffering from that. And the idea of getting help and the importance of getting help, and knowing there's nothing wrong with taking medication, there's nothing wrong with going to therapy, there's nothing wrong with talking to somebody. I know that Scott and I did a episode on, I think getting help or therapy or something like that, but like, oh, we talked about pastoral care and counseling. The idea that, if you don't know where to start with your pastor and talk to them, and they will tell you whether or not they can help you. And if they can't, they can point you in the direction of the right person to talk to, whether it's a professional or a licensed counselor or therapist. But the idea is that, it's okay to get help. It's okay to, seek guidance with your mental health. And I think if anything, it's taught me to slow down. It's taught me to appreciate every day. It's taught me to appreciate my spouse even more, my wife. It's taught me to appreciate my friends and my family and the people that are around me, and the idea of just taking care of myself. So I know, Scott, that I kind of went all over the place, but what are your thoughts, and like, do you have questions for me? And
Oh.
maybe we can just kind of unpack what I've
Well,
shared.
yeah, so sorry, I'm a little out of breath because right when Mike was talking, I forgot that there's people coming over to the church and I had to let them into the building. So I'm barefoot running across the cold parking lot trying to set disable the alarm and unlock. So boy, I didn't think I was going to run a track marathon this morning, but apparently I did. So,
And it's
yeah,
30 degrees in Ohio today, so.
wow, goodness. So, yeah, so there's a couple things that are kind of key with your story is that, well, I think when we go to the definition, Mayo Clinic has a definition about mental health, and it's like mental health refers to a wide range of mental health conditions, disorders that affect your mood, thinking, and behavior. And I think that's a pretty good definition. Other statistics that we see through the Mayo Clinic is that at least one time in one person's entire life, they'll be diagnosed with a mental illness. About 50% of all Americans develop a mental illness by the time they're between 13 and 19 years old. So they develop a mental illness, and then I think like the average, most people will experience their first mental illness challenges when they're age 14. So mental illness is very common within our society, and a lot of times when it comes to churches, I think churches talk about mental illness, but they don't really have a good plan on how to help people who may be struggling with mental illness. I mean, I kind of see that with kids, especially kids who are diagnosed with ADHD. Sometimes a lot of teachers will see them as being disrespectful, not paying attention, just kind of being a wild child or whatnot, and not realize that they're dealing with a kid who may have an undiagnosed disorder. Or they could be diagnosed, but they just don't give medicine. Like I had a kid who, a sweet kid, loved this kid, but I could tell on the weekends his grandparents would never let him take his medicine on the weekend, but they made sure he took his medicine during Monday through Friday when he was in school so he could focus on his schoolwork. But all the other times he never took his medicine on the weekend. So, Wednesday night youth group, Very calm, very chill, very relaxed. Sunday Bible study, all over the place.
Yeah.
So I think what kind of is interesting about your story, Micah, is the fact that A, you notice there's an issue, B, you got yourself some help. And I think the kind of the big thing, and I think the thing that scares a lot of people is the concept of taking medicine. I think that scares a lot of people because A, you happen to take medicine to help yourself. That kind of, I think, pushes people away because then they feel like then they have to admit, like, oh, there's something wrong with me. I have to take medicine. Which, if I get a cold, I take medicine to feel better. If I get the flu, I take medicine to feel better. But when it comes to my own mental health, then I have to take medicine for that. Then that becomes a challenge. I think, and I think of that could even be just a sense of pride, or it could just be, does my insurance even cover this? I think that's probably more of the big issues. Does my insurance cover this medication that the doctor wants to put me on, or the psychiatrist wants to put me on? And then I think the other fear with medication is, am I going to be stuck on it for a long time? Like, is this going to be my life? And I'm just going to be medicated. And I think that is something that kind of scares a lot of people. Like when my mom was diagnosed with dissociative identity disorder, she was on a lot of medication. And then she was on medication from probably by the time she was diagnosed, which would have been, I think she had her proper diagnosis when I was like in first grade. So that would have been like 90, I think, 80, 89, 90. And then she finally was off medication because she had fully integrated and no longer was diagnosed as DID. And that would have been like 2001. So from 89 to 2001, my mom took medicine. But I think the thing about medicine, and like you mentioned it too, is that you're on medicine, you're doing better, your counselor says you're doing better. We're going to reassess, which usually that means is we're going to lower your medication. And we're just going to keep lowering how much medicine you're taking to the point where you can be completely off it. And I don't think, and I think that's not a bad way because, again, medicine is just like a tool to kind of help you function, to be highly functional so that you don't have a panic attack or you're not like driving. And, Alicia was with you when you told your story about being in the car. But if Alicia wasn't in the car and you're having these, you're getting hot, you're feeling like you couldn't breathe and you're by yourself, like, you probably would pull off to the side of the road, but you probably wouldn't know what was going on. You probably wouldn't know what to do or what happened at that point. There's a lot of things where there's a lot of variances when it comes to mental health. And I think the challenge for churches is, I'm not expecting all churches to be counselors or the read through the DSM, but they also have to reckon that sometimes when there's certain things that may seem off or weird, there seems that may seem like, quote unquote, unnormal. It's not because that person is just being rebellious or anything else. They could have a undiagnosed mental disorder, or they could have a diagnosed mental disorder. Like, for me, who has an attention, which I found out later, I have an attention defect, which, sometimes I'm very good, but like, I forgot I was supposed to let people into the church this morning at 8. Had no clue because, again, it's not part of my regular rhythm. So it's not like I put that in my calendar. So all of a sudden, when I'm getting phone calls and I'm getting someone knocking at my door, and I'm thinking, who is knocking at my door? And I looked at the time, I saw it was 8:15. I'm like, oh crap, I'm supposed to let people into church. And that's why I was like, keep talking, I gotta go.
Sure. Well, and I think too that like, I shared a little bit when you were running over to the church that like it's there are just so many different types of disorders or mental health, whether it's anxiety, and if you break anxiety down into social anxiety, generalized anxiety, separation anxiety. There's so many different types of anxiety. Talk about depression. There's seasonal depression. There's manic depression. There's regular depression. Bipolar disorder. Schizophrenia. There. What your mom was diagnosed with. Like there are so many different types of mental health. And my wife will tell you now that I have, she likes to say it like this, but I have moments and I don't, instead of days, like where I have a couple of bad moments every day, or if I have a moment during the day where I feel super anxious, I have to just kind of pull myself back, collect myself. And you wouldn't believe the number of things that I've done to get back to where I am. Essential oils, went down the vitamin rabbit hole where I take their B6 is supposed to be good for anxiety. Magnesium glycinate and D3 are supposed to be good for anxiety. So I take all that stuff every day. I'm on Zoloft, an SSRI, which is an anti-anxiety antidepressant. I'm on Ativan, which is another anti-anxiety medicine. And so like I do yoga every day. I do meditation and breathing and go for walks and praying. Like my prayer life was just something that I felt was lost. Not lost in a sense of like, oh, I didn't do it, but like felt like I really needed to lean into God more than I'd ever leaned into God before. And I also said too that I wouldn't wish this on my worst enemy. And it was so bad that I would drive to work and I would go for about a half a day and I'd have to go sit in the car and I'd just start sobbing, start crying. And my wife had to take me home and I'd just go sit in our room and not really do much. And just couldn't be around people. There was a weekend where I couldn't leave the house. Like I just couldn't. But thankfully, through medicine and everything else, like I've been able to go, as I just stated, like, right, I wasn't able to go to the grocery store or the coffee shop. This past weekend, I was able to walk into Menards. I was able to walk into Home Depot. I was able to walk into Starbucks. And that wouldn't have happened 3 months ago, 6 months ago. My wife would go in, I would sit in the car, whatever. And people are like, well, was it the stress of school? Because I'd finished school in January. I'm like, no, I actually really enjoyed school. School was more of an outlet for me. I enjoyed learning and I enjoyed, and like, I don't think it was sin. I don't think it was, I just think it was a combination of things. Baggage from the church that I had not dealt with, baggage in my own personal life that I had not dealt with, paired with, working full time and going to grad school full time. It's a lot, right? And if you don't know how to deal with it, then it can be very hard to deal with. And some people just can barrel through it and not deal with it, and they can be fine. And there's nothing wrong with that either. They can just handle stress better than others. And so I do think it's kind of strange that in my 30s this happened. I mean, there were some symptoms like throughout my life where I've been anxious about things, but not to the degree of what happened last fall. How do you think the church can be better at serving and facilitating those who suffer from mental illness?
Yeah, so I think there's really I think there's really two main things that people have to the church, and I'm specifically, addressing church leaders, but also how do church leaders communicate to their congregation? And I think a lot of times the first thing it has to do with education. Educate yourself about mental illness. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that, okay, pastor, you need to go to audit a psychology class. You need to go buy a DSM-5 and read through it and try to figure out how to navigate through it. Like, that's not what I'm talking about, but I'm talking about just what resources does your denomination have on mental health? Like the thing I pulled up on the internet I just kind of typed in like, oh, taboo, why is, mental illness still taboo in the church? And there's this resource that came up from the United Methodist Church, was the first one. And they talk about like, hey, here's the resources we have. We have these little resource guides or on how to deal with mental health and how do you create a caring culture within your congregation to people who have mental health illnesses. So I think that's good. Also, making sure that you put within your church like numbers for the National Suicide Hotline, because people who are struggling with mental health and kind of keeping it quiet, that can lead to, that unfortunately that can lead to going down a very dark place. So, making sure you have those numbers so you can call and talk to somebody. And then I think the other thing is when someone does decide to either talk to you or you notice there's an issue with one of your congregants and you believe it might be a mental health thing. One thing you may do is just, don't like call them out in the middle of a crowd because that's not going to work, but schedule a meeting, have a nice private meeting with them and just talk about, hey, I've noticed this type of behavior in you. Do it in a very loving and non-judgmental way. Just talk to them and see, and maybe, they may be opened up to you, say, yeah, I struggle with this. And then that could be questions like, oh, are you seeing anybody for, whatever mental illness that you have? Are you taking any type of medicine? What are you doing to help? And I think it's one of those things where if they're not doing anything, try to offer to A, not only get them help by saying, hey, I know a buddy who's a counselor in the area. I think you should go talk to him, but even make the appointment to go with them. Like, hey, how would, because, I think going to a counseling session by yourself, especially if you're someone who really struggles with asking for help or you don't want to disclose your illness, can be very scary that you're now going to be sitting in a room alone for 45 minutes with a complete stranger talking about your challenges. So if you have like a family member or a good friend at the church or even at the pastor, if you're able to just schedule a block off and say, hey, I will go with you to your appointment, so that way they feel comforted. And in that way, while you're talking, you can kind of know a little bit about, okay, here's what they have. Here's kind of what they've been diagnosed with. So here's the best way that I can help them. And then also, if they're against it, talk with family members. I think that's the best thing is, talk to family members. See, hey, is there anything we can do to kind of lighten the load, especially if you know that the undiagnosed or even mental illness is affecting families. That's, how do you help people? How you help those families. And, you could do that in a lot of ways, from financial assistance to help doing chores to transportation to childcare, or simply just being there to listen with them, be their friend, and to pray with them. I think, and just me saying that, it seems like, oh, it sounds exhausting. But as a pastor, if you have a congregation that you have created a culture to care for people with mental health illness, it shouldn't be exhausting because you already have a support group. I know years ago, my church that I grew up in started a ministry called the Ministry of Care and Encouragement. And it just kind of started with, hey, we're just going to write letters to people who are in hospitals, send them cards. We're going to give cookies to first-time visitors, and we're going to send care packages or letters to kids who went off to college. But eventually, they paired it up with Stephen's ministry, and then they kind of got to a point where they were really caring for people within their congregation who were struggling. And maybe that could just be illnesses that you get at old age, like dementia, Alzheimer's, or maybe just kind of dealing with depression, anxiety due to the fact that you can't do everything anymore like you used to. If you're a blue-collar worker and you're used to doing everything and fixing everything, and now it's hard for you to get out of bed in the morning, then, having that help and having that extra support, can kind of be a godsend to some people.
Yeah, and I know you got to run because you got class in a bit, but like kind of the last thing I want to say is that I really think that more people suffer than what we realize, and that aren't transparent or open about struggling with mental illness. Great example of that was yesterday. I had texted a good friend of mine, and he's a mechanic. He's a solid dude, can fix anything. He and his wife were just wonderful people. We had not seen them since like last fall, since all this started happening to me. And so we were out running errands yesterday, and we drove by where their subdivision is, and I texted him and said, "Hey, are you guys home?" And he said, "Yeah." And I'm like, "Well, do you mind if we stop by?" And so we stopped by, and I shared everything that had been going on with me, and he was like, "Did you know that I have bipolar disorder?" And I was like, "No." He was like, I struggled for years with anxiety and depression, and apparently he struggled a lot with alcoholism, and he was self-medicating rather than getting the medication he needed to treat what was going on. And so he finally, he shared his heart with me, and he's like, "Man, I just want to give you a hug." And so he hugged me, and it was just this very, it was a beautiful moment where it kind of just solidifies my point where, more people struggle with this kind of stuff than we know. And how do we create a space where people feel safe and, okay with sharing what's going on with their lives? Because we live in this fast-paced world where it's not always okay to share what's going on, because you got to get to the next thing, you got to get to the next meeting, you got to get to the next assignment, you got to get to the next soccer game, whatever it is. So, I don't know where you want to leave it, but like, I just think people need to realize that more people suffer than what we realize.
Yeah, and you bring up a good point about just our society being so fast paced. Like, when I think about the statistics of, kids develop, people developing a mental health disorder like during their teenage years. Like, I live in a community where sports is like the big thing. Like, it's very hard for me to find a student that does absolutely nothing. Either if they're not involved in sports, they're involved in theater, they're involved in band. And it's like that pretty much throughout the whole entire year. Maybe they have a break in the summer, but there's a part of me that goes, okay, if there's a someone who's like a basketball player, very good basketball player, they develop a mental health disorder, but they can't take care of it because they're constantly at practice. And then when they're not doing school sports, they're doing traveling sports. When do they finally get to the point where they can get checked out or diagnosed? Like when they're done playing basketball, when they're out of college, and if they get it, if they are playing basketball in college, like when does it go? When they finally have time on their hands? And then by that point, they probably don't even realize they have a mental disorder. They're just like, well, I deal with this stuff, but it's just kind of part of my personality. It's just part of who I am. And I think the temptation is well, if this is who I am, then I don't need to change. But if you're dealing with something that you feel like is not healthy or not normal or something where you go, man, I really am tired of just worrying about stuff all the time, or I'm really tired of just feeling fatigued all the time. Like every time I come home, I just feel like I just want to sleep and then wake up the next day and do life all over again. Like if there's something that you think like, oh, this may not necessarily be where I want to be, or I feel like I'm stuck in a rut. If you're someone who feels like you have those moments and you don't necessarily know why you're stuck in this rut, like go seek, go talk to a counselor, go seek help, go. And I think the beauty thing about counseling now is most insurances now kind of cover some type of mental health services. It's still not great, in my opinion, but it's a lot better than it was like 10 years ago.
I mean, I have really good insurance through the university, and so thankfully, like, I think my copay, I do a copay for my therapist. My one anxiety medicine is free, and the other medicine, anxiety wise, that I take is like 39 cents when I fill I mean, yes, I yeah, insurance is wonderful when it cooperates.
And then I think the other thing too is there's also not only with insurance, but there's also like online mental health now. So if you're somebody who maybe you're someone who struggles leaving the house, like every time you go out of the house, you're filled with dread and anxiety, maybe because you had a traumatic experience where you were out in public and something bad happened to you, so you now don't leave your house. You can actually speak to somebody. Just like how Mike and I are speaking through Zoom, we can do that, and you can actually talk to a counselor through a digital service. And they can, again, they could diagnose you, they can write you a prescription that you can go pick up at your local pharmacy. Like there's a lot more opportunities to be able to get the help you need when it comes to your mental health. So there's not like an excuse like, oh, well, there's not a doctor who takes my insurance. Well, try online because I'm sure there's at least one, some online services that would take your insurance. So that's kind of where I'm going to kind of wrap up. But yeah, I think to kind of summarize, as far as the church aspect, be educated and always try to figure out ways that you can care to people and always encourage people who may have a maybe a diagnosis in their like your buddy who was self-medicating instead of actually getting real medicine. Like if people are self-medicating or people who are not getting medicine, but they know their diagnosis, like encourage them, be their friend and walk beside them. I mean, I think when my mom finally got healthy from her mental illness, I think it was because there was one member of the church who really kind of took my mom under her wing and really walked her through, went to her counseling sessions together, was always there to be a phone, was always a phone call away in case my mom was dealing with some stuff, like was always there for her. And I believe because of that, that's kind of why my mom was able to overcome DID, which anytime when I tell a counselor about the story, they're shocked because usually you never hear of anybody no longer being diagnosed with DID or being completely cured of DID. It's like an impossibility for a lot of psychiatrists, but I believe it is good if you're have a good counselor and you have a good support system. And friends, that's going to be it for us today. So friends, thank you so much for listening. Hopefully this story has resonated with you. If you're somebody who is dealing with mental health issues, or maybe you're someone who was able to get help and you want to share your story about how you got help and how it's changed your life, and that can be an encouragement to other people, shoot us a comment, shoot us an email at our website, thescott7.com. We'll read your stuff on the air, and we will be back on with another episode. Take care. Thank you for listening to the Scott Simon Podcast. The Scott Simon Podcast is made possible by support from our listeners. We thank listeners like Patty and Scott, whose support goes to this podcast's continual growth and maintenance. If you want to support this podcast, you can do so in a number of ways. First, feel free to give us a 5-star rating if you enjoyed this episode and share it with your friends. If you'd like to financially support the Scott Simon Podcast, you can go to the website ko-fi.com/the Scott Simon Podcast. That website again is ko-fi.com/the Scott Simon Podcast. Thank you so much for listening.